Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Scott Semin Podcast. We have an exciting episode today, an episode that is very relevant to our times, and that is AI, artificial intelligence, and how the church feels about it, and some ways the church can use AI, both for good and for bad. But before we dive into our topic, I'll introduce my co-host, Micah Current. Micah, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, as always. I'm actually here, not like AI, like artificially. I'm not like a hologram.
Yeah, if you're still using Zoom, there's this little button down here that says AI Companion. I'm not clicking that button, and they just generate this AI Micah that I'm talking to.
I clicked on it and it says ask admin to enable an AI companion.
No, yeah. I'm not able. I don't want a third person in here talking. It's like when you remember like Jeopardy, when they had IBM had that computer that was competing against like the top champions. I think like Ken Jennings was one of them, like the top champions of Jeopardy, and AI kept beating these guys. But then there'd be occasionally AI would get something like completely wrong, and it was like an easy question too, and everyone just like laughed at the silly computer. But yeah, that was years ago. That was like over 10, I feel like that was over 10 years ago, believe it or not. Like, goodness. But yeah, speaking of AI and wild things, stories gone wild. Micah, do you have a story for us?
Yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily wild, but I thought it was funny to share on the show. And before we started recording, I kind of shared it with you. But over the weekend, we were running around getting stuff at the grocery store and doing some other shopping, getting some stuff ready for the nursery and all those things. With the baby coming in a couple of months, we got to try to get things together as quickly as we can.
And by the way, listeners, Micah hasn't officially announced it on the show, but Mike and his wife are pregnant. They're having a baby, daughter, correct?
Little girl, yes.
Little girl. So excited about that. Finally made it Facebook official at least a day or two ago. So,
oh, there are reasons behind that. So, yes, but yes, we did.
Yes.
But anyway, we had to run around and get some stuff. And my wife, there's a couple of stores that are like aimed right towards like pregnancy and things like that. And there's this really cool store in Fairfield, which is in, you know, closer to Cincinnati, called Reruns for the Wee Ones. And it's like secondhand baby clothes.
Yeah.
And so like we went in there and they had like all these onesies and stuff for like 99 cents. And we got a bassinet for like retail at $80. We got it for 50. Like, it's just really cool store. Toys, cribs, car seats, all this stuff. Right. So anyway, we're stopping at all these different stores and, you know, I'll go into some, but not others, you know, because if they're crowded, I ain't going in them. Right. Cause they'll get on my nerves or, you know, anxiety, whatever, as I shared. So I'm scrolling through social media and I see that somebody's having a yard sale in Trenton where we live. And, scrolling through the pictures of what they have. And, you know, if I'm Scott Stedman, the first thing I saw was video games. And I'm like, oh, I wonder what video games they have. Like, do they have Nintendo games? Cause I want to buy a Nintendo console, like just the classic NES.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I don't have any idea what happened to mine from when I was a kid. But anyway, I noticed this lamp and I was like, oh, that's a really cool lamp. We could, you know, use that either in the nursery. We could use that in the office at the house. Like, it's like one of those corner lamps with the long legs and it's like a tripod. It's just a really cool piece. And so I messaged the folks and I was like, how much is it? And they were like $10. And I was like, well, I'm in town. I can stop at a bank and I'll be there in an hour. And they're like, great. I'm like, cool. So we're on our way home, and granted, they're only about two or three blocks from where we are. And so I turn into the subdivision and I look to the left and I see these two little boys are probably like 10, 11, 10, 12, something like that. And they're carrying this lamp that I wanted to buy down the road. And Alicia looks at me and she's like, "There's your lamp." I was like, "That's the lamp I wanted." I was like, "Oh no!" I was like, "Why do they?" And they just look so proud because they were like, I mean, like I said, 10 or 11. I mean, they're not very tall yet. They haven't hit puberty, but they're like struggling to carry this lamp down the road. And it looked like their mom and dad were like, "Kids, go get that lamp." They're just dragging it down the street, and I'm like, "No, I wanted it." It's almost like Facebook Marketplace or any other kind of third-party site where you go to buy stuff, and it's like a gamble, right? Like it could be either really cool, it could be really trash, but it's also, it's hard to get stuff because people will, buy it. They'll snatch it up pretty quickly. Like I
Yeah.
remember last summer, I sold some stuff around the house on Marketplace, and it was like, I put a microwave on Marketplace, and within an hour, I sold it because people just need it, and I think it's a great resource. So,
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
yeah, I didn't get the lamp that I wanted, but it's fine. I
Yep.
have plenty of lamps at my house.
Yeah. Oh goodness. So my story has gone wild. I was involved yesterday. So, annually, the youth do this, and it's been a tradition at the church I'm at, where they do something called the Red Balloon Fundraiser. And basically, what it is, you get a bunch of red balloons, you blow them up, you put like a ribbon or string on them, and then you attach an envelope. And the envelope has a dollar amount, and it goes from like one all the way up to how many balloons you had. We end up doing like 250 balloons. So we had denominations from one to $250 that people can donate. So I get up at 5:30 in the morning, I get dressed, I head over to church, and I start getting some of the balloons filled with helium and tie them off and everything else. Then we go and we then my students start showing up at 7, and we just really start getting them done. And by the time our 9 o'clock service starts, all our balloons are blown up. Envelopes are attached, and then people go, they'll grab a balloon or two, and then, they'll take them home, put some money into it, or they'll do the donation online, and we get the money back. And then that helps fund our missions trip and everything in between. So pretty cool, pretty cool. So we're done. Service is over with. I tell our Sunday custodian, don't worry about moving the balloons. I'll go and I'll get them because I have to pull the envelopes off. It's just I have to, because the same day I had to go to the library, because that's where the teens were meeting, because we're doing like a scavenger hunt throughout the city. And we've done it like every fall and every spring. So do that, finish it up. They had 31 things they had to do to award, get points, and whoever wins, I get to pay for their ice cream at the local ice cream shop. So it's kind of a big event that we do. So had that. And then from 5 to 8:30, we had our strategic planning meeting. We've had consultants come in, and this is where we're coming back to kind of talk about certain things. And we get put in certain groups to talk about either service, worship, faith development, etc. So all this stuff is happening Sunday. And I always tell people, like, Sunday is my busy day because I literally live at the church on Sundays, because I'm there for worship, I'm there for youth, and there for anything in between. So we're finally done with our strategic planning meeting. I come home, I'm like, I just want to sit on the couch and just kind of decompress right now. Laura was fitting some job application. She goes to bed. I stay up a little bit. I go to bed. Next, Laura has to wake me up. I hear my alarm going off. I look. My alarm goes off at 6:30. It was 7:15. I didn't even hear my alarm because I was so exhausted. But then when I looked at my phone, I noticed that at 2:30 in the morning, I got a call from our church security. Then a voicemail was left. Then I get a call from our financial manager. And then I get a voicemail. So I'm like, okay, what the heck is going on? So I open it up, and I see the fi I look at the voicemail from our financial manager saying, hey, do you think you could go over there? Because the police are on their way to the church. And I didn't know if you would be able to get over there. And I'm thinking, oh man, I didn't even hear it. Like, And again, like my ringer's on, like I should hear this, but I was just so exhausted from the whole day that I completely fell asleep. So I'm thinking, okay, well, who would be breaking into the church at 2:30? And then I realized, I bet you anything, it was those darn balloons that are still floating, triggering the ascensor, and that's why the alarm was going off at 2:30. And I truly expected, because then I went over there to check because I saw someone reset the alarm. And I'm like, okay, well, who's over there now? So I went over there to check, and it was one of our preschool teachers. And I went around. I'm thinking, man, I'm going to expect like all these pop balloons on the ground because the police were in there just like popping the balloons. But no, they were still there. They're all on the ground. They're still there. I'm like, all right, well, there he goes. So... So after we're done podcasting, I'm gonna have to go over and apologize to the business manager. I hope she didn't have to come over to the church. Hopefully she realized, I bet you it's those darn balloons.
We should do a podcast on like the craziest alarm systems we've had at churches.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. But anyway, but that was my story's gone wild. So today we're going to be talking about AI and in the church. And I think it's an interesting concept. Micah, have you used any AI? Like, have you used like any type of AI, like art generators or Chat GPT or anything like that?
Yeah. So, I've used both actually. So one, ChatGPT, for one of my classes last fall before I wrapped up my master's program, I did the, I forget what the class is actually called, but it was all about ed technology and stuff in the classroom. And that included ChatGPT and other programs mm-hmm. using artificial intelligence. But I've used ChatGPT a lot for cover letters, for jobs that I'm applying to. I plan on doing a doctorate in the future. I kind of know what I want to talk about. And so if you type in dissertation outline in ChatGPT,
mm-hmm.
it populates an entire outline. And I'm not saying like that I'm using that to cheat or anything, but like it literally just generates – you know, an outline for you. And so like I can base ideas off of that outline, et cetera. And then in respect to graphic design and art, stuff like that, like I know that Adobe, not Photoshop, well, Photoshop, but Adobe Creative Suite and other programs like Canva have an AI creator studio where mm-hmm. they can help populate images and give designs and things like that. And I've used that in some graphic design stuff that I've done as well. I'm kind of curious to hear what you're hearing about AI in the church and what they're using it for in the church.
Okay, yeah. So I know one of the things that I've been having a conversation with AI has to do with, you know, me doing my doctorate. Because Ashland ended up updating their student manual, basically saying, hey, when you're writing your papers, you're not allowed to use generative AI. And it was actually interesting because we were talking about that with our professor. And our professor, and it's kind of interesting because there's a professor within the Church of God, at least a buddy that I know whose family's very close to mine, and was professoring down in Florida as a professor and kind of said how he's retiring. Because, and then, you know, I think one of the reasons was due to age, but I think the other reason was is because of the AI thing. He goes, I don't know if I can deal with this. Like, I think it'd be too hard to figure out what to do with AI. And plus his doctorate's like in preaching. So he's, so his big thing. So that would be, he said it would be very hard to kind of figure out like, oh, what to do. But then I'm talking to my professors and they're saying, oh, we'll know if you're using AI. And one guy goes, well, how would you know? And he goes, well, very simply, we could read your paper. And we could read and we go, okay, you know, this sounds like Scott. This paragraph sounds like Scott. This paragraph doesn't sound like Scott. Like, it, like like, because again, these professors have been reading your papers, especially in a doctorate level. They read everything you've written for the last 3 years. They kind of know your style,
style.
how you taught, how you speak, how you know, they have you in class, so they know how a lot of times how you speak, you know, sometimes that gets woven into how you write too. And they will know very quickly that, okay, something's being gone. Sometimes they've even noticed that sometimes AI will generate sources. Say, oh, hey, here's this quote or here's this thing, and then here's the source, and they'll use the correct whatever format you decide to put into the system, but then they could go and look up the source and realize, hey, that doesn't exist. And easily they'll know, and it's like, okay, you're busted. So, you know, AI, especially when it comes to church, one of the things that I've experienced with is our church management software. And I know there's a lot of church management software out there. The stuff that we're using, it was very interesting because a lot of times I write like emails to a lot of people, like parents of children, parents of youth, have these two main subgroups. So, like, if I'm writing to my confirmation parents, I'll type something up and say, hey, just a reminder, confirmation is, we have a class this Sunday. Here's what we're talking about. Make sure you're there, blah, blah, blah. I could write something in the body of the text before I do a mass sending out of emails. And there'll be a button like with a magic, like the little, and it's like a wand with stars around it. It's like a magic wand. And I can click on it and it could tell me whatever I wrote says, make it friendly, make it professional, make it casual. They could even say, you know, do spell check or have us write your thing for you. And then all I have to do is type in like what, like five keywords or something I would like to get across, like remind people that confirmation is this Sunday and we're talking about the Holy Spirit. Maybe just type in a sentence, click it, it'll generate a whole entire thing for me to send out. And then after that, it's done. And then I can just click. Same thing if I'm doing an event and I'm putting something out there, I need a description of the event, type in a couple of words, hit a button, boom, it's done. And then I don't have to really try to think of like, how do I make this enticing or how do I make this more engaging or what, you know, what words can I use differently than the words I'm using to really attract people to what we're doing? Like I can easily just type in a few words, hit a AI button, and AI is going to take care of it for me. So I think in some ways it's a beneficial tool for people who are maybe not strong writers or people who are in roles that, you know, especially smaller churches, like if you have to be your own social media manager and you're not good at it, or you don't have time to really sit there and try to create a picture or type up something. I mean, you could go to an AI generative art site, type in, I need a banner on, you know, for an ice cream social. It can create one for you. And then that's it.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Like when I'm applying for jobs, I'll type in a description for, I don't know, assistant director of whatever, right? At Miami or UC or whatever. And it'll populate a letter for me, like a cover letter. I don't use the text from cover, you know, that they give me. I will copy and paste that into a document and then I'll kind of edit it and make it my own. But, you know, some people are certainly using it just to get by. And I'm seeing these crazy videos where these college kids are in classrooms and they're sitting in a lecture and they're literally just using ChatGPT or some other AI to like record the lecture. And it's like a video of like the computer screen like side by side with like two things up and one's like AI and the other is like a homework generator. So like on one window they're like recording whatever the professor's saying and then in the other window it's like doing their homework for them and they're not even doing anything. That, you know, is a little fishy if you ask me. I think it can be used for good and decent things. And it's a cool tool to have, but like, certainly we're having the conversations in higher ed right now of like, how do we gauge AI and when is it, when is it acceptable, acceptable to use it? And when is it, okay, and when is it considered plagiarism or cheating? I mean, I remember when I was in seminary and like I wrote a paper, an exegesis paper, and as well as I do, exegesis papers are long papers, and you got to really check your notes and your citations and everything. And they took plagiarism really seriously. And this is 10 years ago or so, but like, I put a footnote in there wrong, and the professor gave it back to me. She's like, "I can't take this because it's plagiarism," and it's because I put the footnote in there wrong, and that was before AI was ever a thing, as far as like to what we know of it now. It's kind of I've in regards to the church, it's kind of interesting to see like, could you, and I'm sure you could do this, but like you could type in, "Give me a sermon on the sermon on." Give me a sermon on the Sermon on the Mount, and it'll
Oh,
populate an outline for you. And
I can do it right now.
well, I'm sure you could, but I'm wondering, does that water down the gospel, and does that water down, your ability, ability to communicate to people? And it's like, okay, if I'm just chatting, chat GPTing this outline for the Sermon on the Mount, and then I get up on Sunday because I didn't have time to write a sermon, or I didn't want to write a sermon, I just sit up there and just read what ChatGPT produced for me. It kind of waters down the gospel. Did you
Yeah,
did it, didn't you?
I did. So it's still typing it, but I'll read it to you. Here we go, right? Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, today we gather to reflect on one of the most profound teachings in human history, the Sermon on the Mount. Hold on, it is keeping delivered by Jesus Christ. In this sermon, Jesus offered timeless wisdom and guidance, shaping the moral fabric of societies for centuries. Firstly, let us contemplate the significance of the setting. Jesus ascended a mountainside, a symbol of transcendence, signaling a departure from the mundane concerns of daily life to a place of spiritual elevation. It's here that Jesus, the embodiment of divine wisdom, imparted teachings that continue to inspire and challenge us today. And
Hallelujah.
oh my gosh. Well, and here's the interesting thing about this. I think this is going to be one of the temptations. Because before, one of the temptations that pastors had to deal with was plagiarism. And one of the things I would say about that is I remember when I was looking for a church, I actually had a phone interview with a church out in Missouri. And I was talking with them and we're talking, things seemed good. And I just kind of asked, like, oh, they're talking about how they had to get rid of their pastor. And I'm like, oh, what happened? Like, why did you have to get rid of him? And they said that this pastor was here for, a lot of years, a number of years. Everything started to grow, was very kind of charismatic person, had a good energy. But there was one time where a elder was sitting there and was hearing the pastor speak, and he goes, huh. This message sounds very familiar. So sure enough, as he's listening to it, he's kind of like thinking, "Where I know I've heard this somewhere." And then he realized, "Oh, he heard it from like, this is a Francis Chan sermon." So the so he you know so he kind of talked to the elders about it. Said, "Hey, here's what's going on." There are some other elders who recognize it. So they go and they have a meeting with the pastor, and they said, "Hey, we noticed your sermon last Sunday was a Francis Chan sermon, but you didn't put anything attributing it to Francis Chan. You kind of made it your own, which is plagiarism, which is being dishonest." And, for the board perspective, they felt that was being dishonest. So the pastor said, "Oh, I'm sorry, blah blah blah." Yeah, I was busy, you know, it was just a busy week. I had a bunch of stuff going on. Didn't have time to really write a sermon, so I did that. So, and the board was like, oh, okay, you know, that's fine. I said, you know, next time, you know, either verbally in the bulletin or even in your slides, just kind of make a little note saying that you're attributing this to Francis Chan or whatever pastor you're using. You don't even have to tell us that, hey, I didn't get the chance to write the sermon. It's just been a busy week, you know, but make sure when you're doing something, make an attribution to it. Okay. Had that meeting, fine. 3 months go by, next thing you know, hey, this is sounding familiar. They checked it again. Hey, you're plagiarizing. Pastor starts, now this time pastor's not being like, oh, I'm sorry. He's like, well, I work hard and blah, blah, blah. You know, just started doing that. So eventually it got to the point where they decided, you know, they're going to let the pastor go. Because, and then it was interesting because then after the pastor left, they were just curious. So they took the one guy, apparently he takes his notes and he always has them. So he has like all his notes in the bulletin that he gets. So he went back to previous bulletins he had. And he just started typing in the name of the title of the sermon. And sure enough, Matt Chandler, Francis Chan, like was pulling up all these things. And he goes, you know, for the last 5 years, this guy was ripping off other people's messages. And, you know, the thing is with AI, like I did, like I put in Sermon on the Mount, and I mean, it didn't give me everything, but again, it gives a summary because at the end, it doesn't give me the full thing. It says, furthermore, Jesus provides practical guidance on prayer, fasting, and the proper disposition of wealth, all aimed at cultivating a life of authenticity, integrity, and devotion to God. In essence, the Sermon on the Mount serves as a blueprint for Christian living. And you can read this, and I mean, how often can a pastor literally just say, I don't have a sermon, I don't know what to preach about, I'm going to type something in ChatGPT on a topic I'm going to preach about, and then get this popped up on. And not only that, but then most people probably wouldn't even know, especially if you're a new pastor. Like if I was to do it, people like, oh, this doesn't sound like Scott because Scott doesn't talk like this. This is weird. Like they would know. But I mean, that's a temptation. You could just go in there, say, you know, AI, type me a sermon, and it'll type you a sermon, or at least a short one. And then you can just expound on it a little bit more, which I guess that's going to be the temptation, because maybe you might be someone like, man, I really need a couple ideas of, I feel God's leading me to talk about this topic, but I really don't know how to approach it. You could easily say, you know, sermon ideas on the topic of addiction. And it may give you some ideas. And if I have those ideas, I may say, okay, I like this idea. I'm going to take that and now I'm going to use that. And then I'm going to now write my sermon based off a suggestion. I think that's a little bit different and trying to use that as an aid versus write a sermon on addiction. And then I get this whole big page, couple page printout of this. And then that becomes my sermon for the week. I mean, I think in some ways that's being dishonest because I'm not making any of changes. I'm not doing, you know, the brunt of the work. It's like, okay, I have some assistance, but now 90% of the work is me doing, writing it, putting in the scripture, studying it, doing all that. I just needed a gentle push in the right direction. And ChatGPT was the one who was able to do that. Now, does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think there's a big difference in like using that as an aid in plagiarizing somebody's sermon.
Oh, yeah.
And using, you know, somebody else's work and somebody else's word. Now, if you're giving them credit, like you're saying, that's one thing. But if you're like ripping off somebody's entire sermon, like, hello, that's not right. But have you heard about I don't know if we've talked much about curriculum for like Sunday school or youth ministry or children's ministry, like, you know, Think Orange or other curriculums that are out there for church ministries. But have you heard of churches using curriculum like canned sermons before? Like if they have like they just buy the curriculum and then they study the curriculum and then they that's their sermon series. Have you heard of that? I led worship at a church a couple of years ago where that they were doing a sermon series, and I'm like, this sounds kind of different, but like they told me they bought the curriculum online, and then it gives you like a month's worth or 6 weeks worth of sermons, and then you basically just take that content and then make it your own. They give you the theme, they give you the outline, and you just make it your own. And you just follow the outline. It's no different than if like you were to have a book and you're teaching a class. Have you heard of stuff like that?
Yeah, and even through like Logos, which is a church Bible software, you can even go on there and you can like type in a topic, and they'll give you stuff through like the books and stuff that you have through there. But then they also have a sermon portal where you can look at sermons of other people who have published their sermons through Logos, and you can look at their stuff. There's even a website. I think there is a website called I want to say it's like you. I don't want to say it's nothing generic. It's not generic like sermons.com, but there is something where you could go on there and you could find a sermon on something, and next thing you know, it's like you could go, oh, here's a sermon, and you could click on it, and you can kind of download a series. You could download an individual sermon, and like kind of like you said, you can download it, and it'll give you some like key things. It'll give you like kind of like a flow of how things need to go, and then you just have to kind of fill in the rest. But as far as the planning and the outline of it, that's already provided for you. You now have to actually do the work on how you make that outline flow from point one to point two to point three if it's like a 3-point sermon. So yeah, there is stuff like that. But there's some other interesting things that AI can do, and this is all comes from a website called Church Tech Today. And there's this one where it says three uncommon ways pastors can use AI for ministry work. And one of the things they have is it can create comprehensive project plans. So let's say there's a you want to try to organize people to be able to pull off an event. Well, you can use AI and you can actually like have them generate like specific SMART objectives. And if you're unfamiliar with that term, SMART objectives, it means it's specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. So basically, it's like, you want to do this big, like, let's say you want to do like a children's carnival in the fall. So your objective is we want to produce a community children's carnival in the fall. And you put that in ChatGPT says, now give me three SMART objectives, and it will break it down. Okay, you need a team that's going to contact an inflatable company to get inflatables. You need to contact somebody. You need a team to do your marketing or advertising. You now need a team to be able to communicate, to be able to get tables and provide food. And then all of a sudden, instead of the pastor themselves trying to figure out, okay, we need to have this, we need to have this. It's like, I want to put on this event. What do I need to get this done? And it'll say, okay, you need this team, you need this team, you need this team. And now the pastor can go to the church like, hey, we want to do this event. And we need a marketing team. We need a team to talk with local businesses to get prizes. And you do all that, and next thing you know, the time it took for the pastor or the pastoral staff to develop this has been cut significantly down because you just had AI basically say, here's what you need to do. The other thing is to understand your congregants better. Like, for an example, if you are thinking, okay, I want to do this big ministry project, but I don't know if we have the budget for it. In the future, I don't know if we'll have the budget for it in the future. What you could do is you could use ChatGPT with any type of like spreadsheets that you have that you're tracking people's giving. And then AI can look at the last couple of years and say, well, hey, you can, because we've noticed that there's at least 30 congregants who their giving has increased steadily over the last 5 years, where you have like a good like 50% of your congregation, they're giving the same, and you only have a few, like maybe like 10% of your congregation where giving has been down or non-existent. So you can kind of look at that and go, okay, well, if this is a trend that's happening in the church, it's okay for me to take a risk and try to do a big event because we're starting to see a trend of giving going up. And instead of having your accountant or your financial manager, your treasurer, trying to look at 5 years of giving statements and trying to figure out if we can do this or not, or if that's something that, or we see a trajectory or a plan, AI can do that automatically for you, and you can kind of see the trend.
I can definitely see the benefits to it. I mean, it's not like a crime to use it, but it's just like, I think there's a right and a wrong way to use it, especially in like the sense of being honest about giving credit where credit is due, like in respect to writing papers, writing sermons, writing, you know, period. If you're writing a book or something or a dissertation, like give credit where it's due. And don't just rip off something you find on the internet. And so, but in respect to church work, if you can make your life easier and if you don't have the staff or the means to cover things like marketing and advertising and social media and budgeting and spreadsheets and outlines for meetings for, you know, your elders and Christian education and staff. And if you have a small staff, like all of these things can make your life easier, right? And you know, cut down the stress of your job significantly. And like, I'm all for that, right? Like, if I can make my life easier at work, then let's go.
Yeah. And it's interesting because even within the website Church Tech Today, there is another article because they have this whole hub on AI. And the name of this article is Generative AI Through the Christian Theological Lens. So they're like taking a theological approach to AI, and kind of the basis is, you know, it's basically breaking it down to, well, we have to understand that we are unique as human beings, that we are created by an intelligent designer who made us wise. We made us in the image of God. But then he also says that, you know, and here's the thing is, they're using Genesis 2:15 that we're supposed to cultivate and keep creation, meaning that when there's technological advances, that as humans, we are appointed by God to cultivate that. So how do we become good stewards of technology and especially good stewards of AI? And they kind of list a couple things. They talk about, you know, they use Proverbs 16:18 that's saying that, you know, unchecked human pride is the downfall of man. So they talk a little bit about, you know, self-awareness about the limits of human capacity for innovation and ingenuity, about how we can have stewardship with AI. They also say caution regarding technology's risk and flaws and humans' tendencies to overestimate our power to self-contain ourselves. And then the awareness of the potential of AI to spread harmful misinformation and make dangerous decisions with permanent and destructive outcome if employed without proper discernment. So even they're saying, yes, AI, theologically, according to this author, is a good thing. And you can make a case theologically that it's a good thing. But you also have to not be so dependent on it. Because, I mean, again, if you're doing sermons, the next thing you know, it develops a sermon series. And you're saying stuff that can be very harmful to people or may rub your target audience the wrong way, or even though you're maybe quoting something that's not even attributed to that person because AI got it wrong, then not only is it going to be painful for you because someone's going to call you out that you're not writing your sermons, you're having a robot do it, but but then the message that it's producing is actually harming your congregation. So you have to be very careful. And I think, again, it goes back to integrity. Like, even like, you know, a lot of times I've had people say, or professors say, you can't use Wikipedia as a resource for your paper. And yeah, don't use Wikipedia for your paper, but one thing that one of my students point out and goes, well, Wikipedia could still be a good tool though. Like if I'm writing something on DS Warner, I could type in DS Warner, read about them, and then there could be a footnote, and I could follow that footnote and say, okay, here's where someone's citing that source. I'm like, oh, it's from this book. I'm going to go get this book by Merle Streggy about DS Warner. And next thing you know,
Merle Streggy.
Merle Streggy, shout out to Merle Streggy. Hey, so,
I had him
but
in seminary.
I had him in undergrad. So when you think about that, it can be a good Wikipedia could be a good tool because it can help you find sources that you didn't know existed, and you can then, and again, like when I'm making citing a source, I'm now using this book. I'm not using Wikipedia.com as I'm citing my source. I'm using this book, but I was able to find it through Wikipedia. So again, you know, sometimes with AI, sometimes it's nothing wrong to get a little push. Sometimes it's not bad to, if you're struggling with how to present this topic, or maybe there's a point that you want to make, and you're going through the Book of Romans, and there's a point you want to make, and you just feel like you just can't get a good illustration, or you don't have a good way to really communicate this clearly because it's kind of a very deep theological topic. You could go in the, you know, I could go into ChatGPT, and I bet you anything, I could say, give me a basic understanding of Romans 6:8. And then ChatGPT could probably put something out there, and then you can kind of be like, oh, that's a good point. That's what I need. And then you can take that part and you can go, okay, this is going to be the thing that I could use now. And then let me tweak it to make it my own. And then we're good. So I think, you know, AI is very beneficial. And I don't think the church or pastors or church leaders should be afraid of it. I think it can be very good and helpful to kind of, again, save time and kind of make things a little bit more smoother so you're not feel like you're just struggling trying to get everything you need to do in your week, from sermon prep to teaching a Bible study to visitation to all this stuff. You can easily just say, okay, I need this. Great. That just saved me 15 minutes of time. This just saved me 30 minutes of time. This just saved me, you know, this saved me an hour of time because I was able to do that. And now I can kind of take this and make this a little bit more simpler. So I'm not spending all day trying to figure out a proposal for something. I have someone who kind of did a little bit of work for me. Now I just got to make it my own.
Yeah, I mean, there are ways to use it, not cheat or plagiarize or things like that. And like I said just 2 moments ago, like it's a great tool to help. I mean, I can see a lot of benefits to it, especially in respect to the church and smaller churches and kind of circling back to a conversation we've had several times, but it's like people are afraid of what they don't know. And if you think about smaller churches and them being threatened by the fact, and what is this AI and why are we using it? It can threaten people in respect to what they do or how they contribute to the church. But it's like, if this is going to make your life easier, then why not?
Yeah,
So.
absolutely. Well, friends, what do you think? Are you somebody who's a church leader and you use AI to kind of help you with your weekly work? Are you someone who is objectively opposed to AI? We would like to hear your comments. You can go ahead and shoot us a put something in the comment sections wherever you listen to this podcast, or you can send us an email through our website, thescottstedman.com. We definitely appreciate you. Feel free to, if you like this episode, feel free to share it with someone, share it with your pastor, share it with another church leader in your home, jeez, I can't talk, Micah. Another church leader that you know, whether they go to your church or not. And you know, we would love to hear how this is affecting you and how AI is affecting you. We'd love to hear your comments. So, guys, thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, and we'll be back on with another episode. Take care. Thank you for listening to the Scott Simmons Podcast. The Scott Simmons Podcast is made possible by support from our listeners. We thank listeners like Patty and Scott, whose support goes to this podcast's continual growth and maintenance. If you want to support this podcast, you can do so in a number of ways. First, feel free to give us a 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode and share it with your friends. If you'd like to financially support the Scott Simmons Podcast, you can go to the website ko-fi.com/the-scott-simmons-podcast. That website again is ko-fi.com/the-scott-simmons-podcast. Thank you so much for listening.